everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Well, today is Fat Tuesday, but even more importantly, at least for this show, is that it is one day before Valentine's Day. And I have as my guest, Brad Coates. So lots of you regular listeners are familiar with Brad Coates. And then, maybe 15, 20 minutes after the start of the hour, start of now, my fiancé, soon-to-be husband, announcement, Brian Brewer will be calling in, and we're going to make it rather personal and talk about what's romantic to us. But first, the famous, sometimes infamous, Brad Coates. Hello, Brad.
Hello, Diana, and hello to your listeners, and happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Yes, and you know
or
about
pre-Valentine's
that
Day, I guess, but
what?
I guess it's actually pre-Valentine's Day, but it's never too early to get started.
It's never too early. And do you know about Fat Tuesday, which is today?
I do.
Yeah. What do you know about it?
Well, I know that it's going to be Mardi Gras time in New Orleans, and probably a fair amount of Mardi Gras action all across the rest of the country.
Probably.
We have a pretty vigorous Mardi Gras celebration here in Honolulu, even.
Oh, I did not know that. For listeners who are new to the program, Brad Coates is an attorney. He specializes in divorce, but he also talks about keeping relationships together, which makes him very unique as a divorce attorney. He's been a friend for over 20 years, and that's really nice. He's been a very frequent guest on this program. The last time was last month. But I thought he'd be an ideal guest for this pre-Valentine's Day, because, Brad, you know a bit about romance.
Well, I've had a fair amount of it in my own life, and maybe an unfair amount of it. I don't know. And I've also gotten to the dubious good fortune to witness the actual starting of romance and also the decline of romance as I divorced, you know, probably my law firm probably divorced 30,000 people over the last 40 years. So I've been able to vicariously witness the rise and fall of romance in other people's lives too.
Yeah, and you even have a party that you give each year. I remember when I lived in Honolulu a long time ago, I went to it, and it's, what is it about broken hearts, your party?
The Heal the Hearts Valentine's Day Ball. The firm I run is called Coates & Fry, and it's the biggest divorce firm in Hawaii. And about 19 years ago, we came up with this goofy, you know, deliciously ironic idea of having the divorce lawyers throw a Valentine's Day party and call it the Heal the Heart. So we have former clients and marriage counselors and other family law attorneys and, you know, everybody in town. We just had it last Friday night, and we had, I don't know, 500 people at that thing.
Well, when I lived there, I attended it. And then one time I happened to be in Hawaii when you had it, and it's a good party. It's definitely a good party. And do people ever, like two divorced people from separate divorces, do people ever meet up at Heal Your Heart's Valentine's party?
Oh, yeah. People meet up. People break up. People do. There's all the dynamics that you'd expect. And we have, we have former clients marrying other former clients. That happens actually more often than you might think. I can think of a half a dozen examples of it just off the top of my head.
Oh, well, then we can officially call you a matchmaker.
There we go.
Informally. So in your book, Divorce with Decency, there's a lot of good stuff. We spoke about it last month, some of it. But let's talk about, because we're still on the theme of what men want. But, of course, we're going to tie this, because it's also what a lot of women want, and then we're going to tie it all back to romance. And you say, under the life trajectory portion, that men are often more happy as they get older. Would you expand on that, Brad?
Well, it's interesting. Apparently, women begin their lives more fulfilled than men do. But as they age, the psychologists seem to feel that women become less happy as they get older, whereas men, in contrast, get happier as they get older. Now, that's a broad generalization, obviously. But the argument that is posed by Maureen Dowd, who's one of my favorite columnists, is that when women stepped into the male-dominated realms, you know, in business, et cetera, that, you know, they wanted to break through the glass ceiling, and they have, to a substantial degree. But that just puts more demands and stress on, working world, stressful in and of itself. So, women now have more choices than they ever did before, but choices in and of itself is inherently stressful. And so Ms. Dowd poses the somewhat surprising and somewhat ironic question, did the feminist revolution end up benefiting men more than it did women?
Yeah, I think that's an amazing question.
The fact that that because women are outdistancing men economically, now marriage is, not only do men prefer the stability of marriage and men can almost get lackadaisical. That's what women get upset about. Men can get almost lackadaisical, just sort of loafing their way into a marriage, but they're happy that way. And now they're apparently better provided for when their wife is making as much or more than they are economically. So it seems like men are actually, happier in marriage and maybe happier in later life in general, especially if they're in a decent marriage, than maybe are women, who are kind of on the, kind of tend to want to be looking for a little bit more, whereas guys kind of just settle in.
Yeah, they're, as you've said before, they're pretty happy in their lazy boy lounger, many of them,
yeah,
and watching sports and getting three meals a day. Well, that's oversimplification because there are lots of men that are not that way, but enough, well, especially the ones who come see you for a divorce. And oftentimes it's the woman who is initiating the divorce.
Yeah, two-thirds of the time it's the woman who's initiating the divorce. And it oftentimes has to do with the fact that, and it oftentimes takes the guys totally by surprise. You know, the woman is, sort of biting her tongue going, isn't there more than this? And the guy's thinking that, what did we talk about, the three meals and the lazy boy loungers, all there really is. And that's for him, that's the be-all and end-all. And for women, that's just, that's just not enough. And, in fact, is almost irritating to see guys settle in, in those lesser issues when women have, much more serious issues that they want to talk about, like talking and communication and funny little things like that men are not exactly attuned to, a lot of them.
Yes, I like this. It's sort of meant to be a joke, but I don't think it really is. A four-letter word that would lead to lots more happiness if couples did it more often, and it's T-A-L-K. It's not F-U-C-K. It's T-A-L-K. And so often I have to help couples communicate, talk more.
That's the Wahine's biggest gripe. The Wahine being Hawaiian for women. I mean, that's what,
right,
I hear all the time.
Mm-hmm.
These gals are just not thrilled with the fact that their husband turned into a couch potato.
Yeah, and who isn't even communicating that well.
Yeah, yeah.
You also say,
and women are in a position to do something about it in a way that they haven't been in society before. So, because they've oftentimes are earning their own keep and doing, doing just fine without guys. In fact, one of the traceable patterns in my divorce practice is that, men, when they get divorced, they almost immediately turn around and try and get remarried, oftentimes within about 3 years. Women oftentimes are happy to be done with guys, and they've got much lower rates of remarriage, and they're just less anxious to do so. They'd almost rather hang out with their girlfriends rather than take care of any more guys.
Well, I think that's true, and also I think, and this leads us to the next question in a way, that men may do better romantically, and that's what we're focusing on in big part for this program, but men may do better romantically. I think that, say, a woman over 50 has fewer choices for a new partner. I'm generalizing, but I see it in my clients. I see it among my friends who are divorced or widowed. So they don't have as many choices. And so
There's no question. I mean, demographically, there's no question what's that true.
Yeah.
The average age for widowhood, this astounded me. 54 years is the average age for widowhood. So there's more widows than there are widowers. And they have an easier time, you know, the guys there for have an easier time getting younger mates. There's a survey in Britain that I've quoted to you before that indicates that men can remain physically attractive to women up to about age 55. You know, the silver fox kind of a guy, like Brian, for example. Yeah. You know, and you know, I mean, certainly women can be fine at 55 too. You know, if you still got a job and a career and you know have taken decent care of yourself, you know you're a hot item as a man, just as a single guy, just demographically. Even if you lack any personality or other elements of charm, you know the fact that you've got a job, you know, and a house can put you in a good situation. I've seen an awful lot of, you know, guys that didn't strike me as being, you know, nearly as cool a guys as Brian or even me, wind up with women that, you know, seem to be, you know, a cut above, but just because that's just the way the demographics are sorting itself out.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right about you and Brian. You're exceptional men. No question about it. No,
I just thought I'd throw that in.
No, I agree. You know, I know you long time, and I've known Brian 7.5 years, and anyway, he'll be calling in shortly. But
a lot of it hinges on how successful the older man. I mean, you know, there's a lot of, you know, beat up older men too that are, you know, poor and just got fired from their job or just got dumped in their marriage. I mean, you know, those guys may not have as easy a go of it. I mean, mm-hmm. if it's an older man who was maybe the initiator of the divorce and he's still a successful guy, you know, he may do just fine. You know, I don't want to sound like I'm a sexist pig here, but, you know, historically, women have oftentimes instinctively sought the protection of the resources and genes of successful men. That's been, you know, that's been traced throughout history. It may be changing pretty rapidly now. But if you're an older guy and you're poorer and maybe have been the dumpy in the relationship, then it's trickier. Because guys whose wives turn around and leave them, especially when they thought they were in a happy marriage, they can be shocked. They can get depression. It can lower their self-esteem. It can lead to sexual dysfunction, which, you know, you'll probably be able to cure, but, you know, a lot of guys face it. It's a different situation depending on where the guy is at the time of the divorce. But post-divorce stuff is an interesting period, both for men and women.
Now, I've done sort of an informal survey of women friends and clients, and I've asked about love and what comes first when it comes to love, and I thought I want to give an overview and get your comments because this would help our listeners, because there are some, well, let's call them secrets for becoming a Valentine if you don't have one now. If you do have one, I hope you make the most of it. But let's talk to the listeners who don't have a Valentine now. And so in this informal survey, what these women didn't even mention was looks. They did not. They did not. Now, these are women over 50 typically. But women, unlike men, at least some men, tend to be much more forgiving of physical flaws, and I suspect.
Well, that's good news for ugly guys like me.
Oh, you're not ugly. You are so attractive. But so many women spend a lifetime examining their own flaws, and so maybe they have a little more empathy for somebody else. I hope so. So not so much looks. What about brains? Everyone wants to stay interesting and wants an interesting partner. Advanced degrees, fluency in languages. I think it's really important to have somebody who's brainy. I've got that in Brian. You're certainly brainy. But love of learning new things plays a big important part.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Love of learning new things. And then you touched on wealth. And some of my sample scorned it because they said, oh, I can make my own way. And all we really want is someone who has found something that he loves and does it well. So that's not true for all women, of course.
Who's going to come out and say it either? You know, who's going to come out and say, hey, I really like him because he's rich? I mean, it's just not politically correct.
That's true.
And I don't know. Like I say, there's no question of whether it's changing because women are as wealthy as guys a lot of the time. That may not be a biggie. I'll tell you another one that I find is humor. I think a lot of people like laughter. That's why
Lust
and Laughter is such a great title for your show, because laughter is one of the keys.
It's a huge key, and I even put this in my Match.com profile that Brian responded to back in October of 2010.
I was going to say, I hope it's not a current Match.com profile if you're getting married next month.
Oh, no, I've been off of it ever since I met him. But I wrote, couples who laugh together last together.
Good.
And humor is so important, and laughing is like internal jogging. So we've covered looks and brains and wealth, and what about power? And I think a lot of women say, well, power is nice, but it doesn't matter whether it's used to run a corporation or help a family prosper. So that leaves one very important ingredient besides humor, and it kind of goes with this, and it makes somebody irresistible, and that's kindness. Because a man who will treat a woman kindly, the best woman will give and forgive much. So I say to guys, treat her kindly, that's all, that's everything. So call her, don't just text her. Show up on time, pay attention to the attention she pays to you. Treat a mistake like a mistake, not a crime. And even if she says her shoulders are fine now, go on rubbing a little more. And, Brian does that all the time for me. Be patient. One-third more often than you feel patient. And I also say a couple more things, and then we'll move on. Pass up an opportunity to correct your errors about half the time. You know, right? Pass up. Don't do that. I mean, sometimes it's important, but don't try to fix it. Try to understand it. Men tend to want to fix things rather than to understand it. Sometimes a woman really just needs to have her guy hear her out, right?
And John Gray says the same thing. Yeah, he says that one of the problems with men's linear thinking is that they're always looking for the immediate fix. And don't have, the word you said is exactly right. Don't have the patience to listen to what the gal is really complaining about or expressing her feelings or whatever. Maybe she just needs to just talk about it, and she's not looking for the quick fix. And that's unfortunately, the men are always jump in and say, well, I can solve that problem. And that's not really what the woman wants to hear.
No. And so sometimes it's useful for a woman to face her partner, put her hands on his shoulders, make eye contact, and say, honestly, honey, I just need to vent right now. I need for you to hear me. Try to understand, but don't try to fix it right at this moment. Just for the woman to say that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in, just still under the heading, the final point I want to make under kindness, I think it's really nice when a man says that, you make me feel lucky. And
oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, you make me feel lucky, and you'll win her heart. No question about that. So you say in your great book, which is in its fifth edition, that in midlife, men move from competing to connecting. And that is really true. And regarding connecting, the happiest men are more expressive and sensuous, gregarious and likable, and they have cultivated their feminine side. And this is a cue for my Brian to call in, because he's done a really good job of cultivating his feminine side. I can help with this, but can you describe the masculine side? This is very Jungian, and the feminine side?
Well, I can certainly do the masculine side. You know, what happens for guys is that they're basically, and this is a really basic trajectory that men's lives take as they grow up and then they grow old. Young men from their teens to their 40s are hardwired to be somewhat single-minded competitors. From the caveman days onward, guys were designed to be physical, to literally be warriors, and not waste a lot of downtime on introspection or emotion. And that gets reinforced all the way along the way, as you know, whether you're making the sports team or climbing the corporate ladder. So, you know, so guys tend to want to stay put based upon those old habits, which were all based on, around competition. And really what, you know, what as you get to middle age in particular, guys have got to switch gears, and they got to switch over to connecting and understanding and relating and showing kindness and patience, you know, which may not have been the thing that made you the star on the football team. So guys have got, or in your you know, law firm when you rose from being an associate to a junior partner to a senior partner. I mean, you know, a lot of that is all competition driven. It's a hard-charging behavior, and it doesn't show the kind of personality that, you know, that is, you know, what you're talking about when you go through your list of saying, hey, people want kindness, and they want patience, and they want communication, humor, laughter, you know, that's what becomes important during your second half of life, whereas guys a lot of times are just totally, especially if they've been successful doing it the way they did during the first half of their life, you know, why would they want to change it, right? I mean, this has always worked for me, just to be a male-dominant alpha guy. And, you know, why would I suddenly want to, you know, turn that on its head and try and do something different in the second half of my life, especially if that's what's made you comfortable is, you know, the role of who you are. That's why guys, when they retire, have a hard time, you know, okay, I'm not a business titan anymore. I'm, you know, I'm just a house husband. You know, holy cow, I just lost half of my panache.
And identity.
And my identity. That's right. Mm-hmm. So that's a, you know, that's a hard transition for guys to make, and yet it's exactly what women are looking for, and that's why there's, you know, they're calling these the gray divorces, where old baby boomers who should theoretically have intact marriages of 30 or 40 years are suddenly getting divorced. It's because the guys are not able to make that switch. I mean, that's a way big exaggeration, but that's an overstatement. But that is the problem that I hear from a lot of ladies. They don't see their husband switching over to being a compassionate, compatible partner. You know, he's still doing his same old, you know, bossy boy kind of stuff. So, you know, guys have got to figure that out, because, like I say, it's the women who surprise them with divorce two-thirds of the time.
Well, that is certainly not my fiancé, Brian, and soon-to-be husband, next month. Ta-da!
Congratulations.
I think Brian's on the line, so welcome to this program, Brian.
Aloha, Brian.
Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful, thanks.
Oh, good. Well, it's nice to be on here with the both of you. So I just wanted to start by saying this, you know, this is one lucky guy calling in here to the program.
Well, I feel very lucky, too. And, you know, sometimes when I see you as my laughing boy, I get the sense that you love me for the way I make you feel. And I love you because, you know, in our everyday lives, everyone wants something from us. So I just love it that we're in love, and we're sexual partners, we're loving partners, and you don't seem to want much from me except to make me feel good, to laugh, to touch. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, I just, you know, that's all true. So back to the what you were mentioning earlier about men developing their more of their feminine side, especially.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about that, because I know you've done it.
Later part of life.
So. Mm-hmm.
You know, Diana's right. I have, you know, for whatever reason, just because of my makeup and my history, I've been able to develop more of that and be more compassionate and be more receptive and be more, you know, less, you know, aggressive, I guess you could say. And so I have, you know, my style of relating to you, Diana, is comes from this motto that I developed early on in our relationship that I want to share, that I'm hoping that any men who are hearing this can benefit from this. And the motto is, worship your woman, and the goddess will reward you.
Good one.
Yeah,
it's a very good one, and I'm the recipient. Lucky me.
And what I mean by that is, you know, when I say worship, it's not worship in a way that puts where you feel one down. It's more just paying attention and giving and being loving and grateful for having the connection and having the relationship and the good times together. And if I think if men could learn to do that more, they would start to reap the benefits of being with a woman who is more satisfied, or a partner who is more satisfied and can reciprocate. And so what it does in our situation is it just kind of generates this virtuous cycle of giving and wanting to do the best for your partner and keeping your partner's needs and desires, make them more important. And if the other person does that, then you've got a nice thing going. Instead of focusing on your own needs, and I'm not saying you don't take care of yourself. That's our number one rule in our relationship is take care of yourself. But if you focus on your partner's needs and your partner is focusing on your needs, you can have a lot of fun. And it's just kind of like a virtuous cycle that builds more and more love and pleasure and energy.
It sure does. And I feel so fortunate because it's such a relief to have you as a partner. And I feel like I would just do anything for you. And I think you feel the same way.
Sure.
So not that, probably some people listening say, oh, that's kind of cheesy. But it's really true. And,
well, it just comes out of that same sentiment of focusing on your partner's needs and pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
If you put the focus there in terms of giving, then it really pays off.
Yeah, it sure does. I think a very deep need for most people is to be appreciated. Mm-hmm. And research shows that when we express gratitude to our partners and make them feel appreciated, they tend to feel happier, more committed, and more appreciative themselves. So it is, as Brian says, it's a virtuous cycle. It's really good. So, Brad, do you have any comment here?
I think anybody can benefit from that notion, regardless of their where they are in their stage of life as well.
Yes.
I was listening earlier to your comments about the demographics of older men who are available and desirable, and it's true. There's a demographic imbalance there, especially
mm-hmm.
because men tend to date women who are several years younger than they are.
Mm-hmm.
But it's essentially if you want to cultivate a good relationship, it comes all about paying attention and giving.
Yeah. Brad, do you have anything to say about this?
Well, it's certainly cute to hear you two virtual
cute.
Cycle Valentine's talk, and I think it's certainly true when you talk about interpersonal relationships between romantic partners. It's largely true with anybody you encounter anywhere along the line in life, same gender, different genders, in business. Just obviously sitting and listening to other people rather than, spouting out yourself and constantly, trying to command the high ground is smart and is a good communication practice in any context. I guess what I would add is that there is, it's particularly, fun and successful in the context of you two, you and Brian, because, you're a giving woman, Diana. You're also a trained sex therapist. And if you're a nice guy, you're going to get a lot of love back from a woman who's, you know, good at giving love. So Brian gets the bonus points for having lucked into the right partner. I'm not just being a smartass about this. I mean, and I'm not trying to sound negative. The flip side that I see a lot of the time, and especially when it comes to sex, and I know I can't come on your show without talking about sex, or you'll never have me back again.
Yeah.
But you know, the problem arises when, no matter how giving you are, and I don't want to make this sound just, you know, male bias, but no matter how giving a guy is, maybe to his wife or partner, there are females, more females than there are males, who have sort of, you know, I won't say given up on sex, or maybe it hurts, or, you know, they, you know, we're too old, or we're too, you know, whatever. And for whatever reason, the sex has gone by the wayside. Now, I doubt that in yours and Brian's relationship, the sex has exactly gone by the wayside. I imagine it's probably right there at the bedside. But there are situations where guys who the statistic that I've got in my book is that some 60% of men, but only about 35% of women, say sexual activity is important to their lives. So I get guys coming in to, you know, just like I talked about how women sometimes will bail on a relationship because they don't sense there's enough communication. I get guys coming in saying, hey, no matter what I do for my wife, she's not going to reciprocate. She's pretty limp when it comes to the physical activity, and that's frustrating to them. And then sometimes they go find somebody who's going to be more sexually responsive, and then we're off to the races again, because that is the one reason I mentioned that guys, you know, women will file for about 2/3 of all divorces. If it's going to be a guy that's going to file for a divorce, it oftentimes has to do with the fact that he's focused on another wahine, another woman. So, yeah. You know, sometimes, and you've said it yourself on these shows before, Diana, if a therapist can fix the sexual component of a relationship, especially for guys, you know, you oftentimes can save the relationship, save the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's that's probably, like I say, a problem that Brian doesn't have to worry about. But he's,
well, Brian,
know,
do you have to worry
not,
about that?
Not everybody gets to be engaged to a sex therapist.
No, I just, how lucky am I? So I'm just sitting back and counting my blessings.
Well, yeah. I'm counting my blessings too. So let's talk a little bit about, because we say often, I say often, that sensual sex can extend pleasure. And so I thought we might talk about sensual sex, and that means romancing the senses. And so I'd like to start, and all of us can talk about this, but start with sight, and then go to touch, and then go to sound, and then go to scent, and then go to taste. For those of you wanting a Valentine, please listen. And those of you who have one, you might make it a more romantic Valentine's Day by paying attention. So with sight, Cicero said that sight is the keenest of all of our senses. And he lived a long time ago. I guess I think that there's some truth to that. So I have a question for Brian. If you saw me at a party, what would first attract you? And then I'll tell you what would first attract me. So, you know, this goes way back to the beginning. This is sight.
Well, to be honest, Diana, you're a beautiful woman. And so that would be what would attract me.
Okay. So that's the sight. Well, thank you. And I have said, I think even on the air, what I appreciate so much, especially as an older woman, I just love it when Brian says, "Oh, you're beautiful." You know, it's kind of very nice.
Every man should tell his partner that, has a female partner, that she's beautiful. That's just, you know, that's relationship 101.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm sure glad you know it. And if I saw you at a party, the first thing that would attract me was your smile, and that your heights. You're nice and tall. That would first attract me. And you do have such a great smile. Now, in terms of sight, you know, I think I talk to a lot of my clients, and I practice this, Brian can tell you, and that is to dress up for sex, you wear some lingerie, and I love Dorothy Parker's comment, and she was such a wit. Brevity is the soul of lingerie.
That is good.
Isn't that good? So, you know, I think women, it's important to remain sexy, dress up. Maybe tomorrow would be a good time to put on some red lingerie. Doesn't have to be if you don't like yourself in red, but red is stimulating, stimulating color for sight, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
No question.
Yeah.
And again, going back to the issue of how important sight really is, how important looks really are. Again, that is you know, that's another dichotomy there, where you, in your list, women don't even really rate looks as being all that important.
Mm-hmm.
At least they don't admit it. They talk about brains and, you know, kindness and patience. There's no question but what men are attracted to women much more rapidly and much more viscerally. By viscerally, I mean they're physically attracted to women. I mean, she's got big breasts, and you know, I want to go talk to her. It's you know, guys are maybe not quite as lofty in their list of priorities as are women, but that is a factor. Guys have historically been proven to you know, fall in love more rapidly and more viscerally than do women.
I think that's true. So let's go, in the interest of time, to the next sense, which is touch. Remember the song, You've Got That Magic Touch? That will date us all. Remember that song? Well,
okay.
You don't. I'm not going to try to sing it because I don't think I should.
Thank you, Diana.
But think about what feels...
Opinion,
what?
You know, in my opinion, touch is possibly the most important of the senses in terms of being intimate and being connected.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, it's something that's so easy to do, and even if you're a person who doesn't take to it naturally, you can learn to learn how to both give and receive, you know, soothing and also erotic touch.
And healing.
Yeah, healing.
And one of the things that Brian put in his profile back in 2010 was that he likes to give and receive massages. And boy, does he ever. Especially, he gives such good massages. And they are healing. And so that's really important.
Brian is such a smooth dog, I'll tell you.
That is
important, and we've talked about this in prior shows, Diana, about how much much more sensitive a woman's skin is than men.
Yeah.
I mean, women literally they are, you know, I forget the exact percentage, but you know, four or five times as sensitive just their basic skin touch and tone than our men. So that can work both ways. Obviously, if you're a smooth dog like Brian, you get to worship the woman and the goddess rewards you, and you know, you're lucky enough to marry a sex therapist. But if you're a ham-handed, you know, pushy guy who, you know, has a few drinks and just jumps on some girl before she's ready, you know, that'll be twice as repulsive. So again, there's, you know, each of the genders has their own cross to bear in these issues, and you want to be like Brian. You don't want to be like, you know, bravado pushy bastard.
No, and especially these days, boy, a lot of these guys are getting in trouble.
Yeah.
And with good reason, all the Me Too stuff. Now, I think a kiss is a wonderful way to touch, of course, and so a guy named Misty Gwet, I don't know the name. I don't recognize the name, but his quote is wonderful. A kiss can be a comma, a question mark, or an exclamation point.
Yeah, I like that.
I do too. And I was thinking, Brian, when we get together next, which is tomorrow night, let's practice our punctuation. You know, with a kiss. And then we can try it being a comma, a question mark, or an exclamation point. How's that sound to you, Brian?
Sounds great.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to it. That's a great metaphor about punctuation.
Yeah. I think it is too. You know, a kiss telegraphs commitment too. And we go back to evolutionary point of view, and a kiss can reveal the health of your partner. So that can be important as well. So all right. So in the interest of time, let's move on to touch. We've done that touch. We're move on to sound. There's a big difference between hearing and listening. And I think we make our lives richer when we pay attention to sounds. And a lot of people in relationships are not very good listeners. That's not true. I know that's not true. I've known Brad a long time. And by the way, listeners, we all got to hang out together when Brian and I were in Hawaii over Christmas, and that was fun. But
that was great.
Both of you guys are listeners. Yes. You know how to listen. And that can be important in your personal life as well as your social life, right?
Well,
it's crucial.
Well,
it's really crucial. And I'll tell you, it's a handy skill to have as a divorce lawyer, because so many lawyers are, you know, they're just so quick to offer, you know, their legal opinions on everything, and just, you know, like you say, we know how to fix things, and you jump in and you, you know, here's what you got to do for your property settlement and custody of your kids, et cetera, and, you know, what's I think been very fortunate for me in building, like I say, what's wound up being the biggest divorce law firm in Hawaii is the fact that, you know, not only I, but my, you know, I try to train my guys, listen more to the clients. We want to hear what they've got to say. And certainly that's part of what they are going to want to feel as far as comfort level with with an attorney, rather than just having somebody bark a bunch of instructions to them. So listening is a great skill across the board.
And Brian, talk about how it is for you professionally, because I already know what an incredible listener you are personally, professionally, like with business plans and so on.
Sure. It's all about, you know, making sure that anybody you're talking to, especially clients, are being heard.
Mm-hmm.
If you want them to continue with you and come back and do more business, they want to be heard.
Along with that is a good amount of EQ, emotional intelligence, which both you guys have, so that you have the empathy. You can kind of clue into your client.
Right. So there's another aspect of sound that I'd like to mention.
Yes, please.
Especially, you know, for setting the scene for lovemaking, and that is music.
Yes.
And I think that it's, you know, a lot of people, you know, you think about putting on romantic music, and yes, that can be a very effective way to set the scene and enhance the romantic atmosphere.
Yes.
And
it sure does.
And you know, back to sight, you know, you mentioned earlier, there's the whole issue of lighting, you know, so dim lights and nice, good music it can really transform an environment into something that's much more romantic and can lead to much more connection and pleasure.
And sometimes, Brian, I call you Mr. Lighting Director or Mr. Sec Director, because you're very good at it.
And make sure everybody heard that as Set Director, right?
Set, S-E-T.
Yes.
But, you know, Sex Director can fit too, but I think it's kind of mutual. It isn't one person in charge. There's a lot of mutuality in that when we come to...
Again, it's just part of listening non-verbally, you know, to what your partner is, what kind of messages your partner is
going
off about. What they like and what they don't like.
That's right. So I also suggest to some of my clients, and I'm suggesting it to listeners out there, that you whisper, instead of sweet nothings, sweet somethings in your partner's ear. Something that you think will exhilarate or calm him or her. Whisper sweet nothings, sweet somethings.
Yeah. Diana, going back to what Brian was saying about lighting.
Lighting.
Do you have any insights as far as, I mean, I've seen, you know, I've seen people who seem to want to, you know, if they're going to make love, they literally, I don't know, it's because they don't want to really, they're not proud of their body or whatever, you know, turn off the lights. I don't, you know, and then, you know, literally lights off versus lights on. I mean, do you have any thoughts about, you know, a smart way to approach that? I, you know, what I find that seems to be nice is just sort of shaded lighting. Brian seems like he's an expert, but I'd be curious to hear what you two might think about that.
Well, it is true, first of all, that women often have body image issues, way more women than men, way more. So I certainly think making love in total darkness is kind of a waste of all
That's
the visual clues.
Yeah.
That can be enhancing. But I think dimmed lighting, maybe putting candles around, and Brian has these it's called LED. What is it, the LED candles?
Just battery-powered candles that are just as effective as regular candles. But I also want to mention that in any of these issues about lighting or sound or touch or whatever, it really comes down to what each partner wants.
Yeah.
And because somebody may really like to have the lights on.
Right.
And someone else may not like a certain kind of look or sound or whatever. And so that's what it comes back to, what you talked about earlier in the program was about talking, about using your words and speaking up and saying what works for you and what doesn't, and also inquiring of your partner.
It's just using your words, asking him or her, what works for you.
Well, that's true not only when it comes to sound and light, but, you know, sex itself. I mean, so many people, I think, just barge right ahead with whatever approach they're accustomed to, and without ever inquiring of their partner, you know, what do you prefer?
Exactly.
That might be a good element of communication, too.
Absolutely. So I have another question, and this was adapted from the people at Time for Two, TWO, and I've had Michael Jonas on this program before, and he and his wife created Enchanting Evening and other games. So this is, what sounds of nature might remind you of your partner? Waves on a beach? For me, that's it, because I get to have waves of orgasms, and it feels like ocean waves. Birds chirping, whisper of a soft breeze. What sounds of nature, there can be others, remind you of your partner? Mm. Either of you want to chime in here?
Avalanche?
Okay.
I'm kind of kidding about that.
I know.
What comes to mind about sounds of nature? I don't know.
Well, how about whisper of a soft breeze? Because that can feel like caressing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So let's move on to scent. And I have a very funny quote to start this out with. And this is from Stephen Bain. He said, "I am rather like a mosquito in a nudist camp. I know what I ought to do, but I don't know where to begin." So, mosquitoes will find us because we smell good to them. And I think it's so important that our partner smells good to us. And I've occasionally had clients, not too often, fortunately, where like the guy was totally put off to cunnilingus because even when she had just washed, she did not smell good to him. So because we connect scents to experiences, and when something smells attractive, it brings up good feelings and even maybe good memories. So the smell of a partner is pretty damn important.
It is, especially because the olfactory sense is a little more closely tied to the the limbic and the reptilian brain area, and it's it's a much more visceral kind of sense and brings up emotions that many people have probably had the experience of encountering suddenly a smell from that they've smelled years or decades earlier and having it bring back memories.
That's
an illustration of how closely the sense of smell is connected to how we feel.
It's a good point, Brian.
It's really important, and that's why, your example you gave a moment ago about the partner not liking the smell of his partner, that can be difficult to overcome.
Oh, absolutely. And in this case, it was. They ended up getting a divorce.
Yeah. But in many cases, it might be just a question of, I don't like the perfume or cologne you're wearing or the soap you used or the smell of the way the clothes come out of the dryer with the fabric softener, that's why it's important to speak up and say what you like or don't like.
Right.
Make adjustments, and sometimes those issues can be dealt with.
Sometimes they can.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking about the time, and let's go to the last sense that we want to talk about, and that would be taste. Because, of course, overall paying attention to your senses can really improve your love life. But how taste, how a food looks to us, its aroma, its texture, its even its sound, gets us ready for how it'll taste. And I think, Brian, you and I have often, I would say virtually every Saturday night that we go out, we transform eating into dining.
Right. Yeah, we make it a sensual experience.
Right.
And that's where taste especially comes into play. And that's why good food and romance and sex are all linked. They're all very sensual and heightening experiences.
For sure. And I think it's really important to slow down. And that's...
Take small bites?
Small bites. Yeah, small bites.
Small bites, yes. Just little nibbles around the edge.
Well, we haven't talked too much about this on the air, but certainly cannabis can help people slow down. Having maybe a cannabis cookie. It's legal here in Washington, and that's pretty nice. Slow down and then pay attention to all of those sensations. So
it's interesting,
When
cannabis was so, driven underground so much for the last couple decades, while it wasn't legal, you didn't have a lot of discussions about this kind of stuff. But since it has, kind of surfaced and people are more comfortable talking about it, I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that cannabis had a negative effect on their sexual relations. Unlike alcohol, where if the guy has too much to drink and passes out on top of you, that doesn't make for a wonderful evening for the wahini. Cannabis, everybody that I've ever talked to say they think it's an enhancer.
Everything I've heard says the same thing. How about you, Brian?
Well, I would. You guys all have good friends. Let's put it that way. No, I think cannabis is not for everyone.
No, that's true.
And it's essentially it affects one's brain to sort of encourage it to kind of let go and relax and be in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of folks who that's just too hard to do. Or there's other people where I think that the effects of the psychoactive chemicals on the brain can trigger negative feelings. paranoia or, you know, a lot of anxiety. And those, you know, and so it's just not for everybody. A lot of it's mediated by the set and the setting, and so somebody can have a bad experience with cannabis at one time and then
later. You know, I think Brian makes a good point, and
yeah.
I'm certainly not suggesting that that cannabis, I mean, obviously anybody that's ever smoked marijuana and been around other people that, you know, can't handle smoking marijuana knows that cannabis is not for everybody. I should amend my prior statement to saying for those people who are accustomed to being cannabis users, they almost all like it as part of their sexual equation as well. I'm not saying that everybody should get stoned and go try and have sex, because I agree with Brian. Not everybody should get stoned, period.
No, and I'm not saying that either. But a lot of people, and including some of my clients, and it's a relief to me to live in a state, Washington State, where it is legal, and now I can talk about it, because for a number of my clients, oh, for example, eating a cannabis-infused cookie can make a difference. I had one couple, and they've been married for 25 years, and he said, finally, after we both arrived at this really nice restaurant on our date night, I could really listen to my wife and hear what she had to say, and I was interested in her work. He normally is not. He's normally kind of an arrogant kind of guy who's real smart, and she works hard, but she liked being heard by him. And then it greatly influenced their sex life later, so it can have some positive effects. I should warn you guys that we stop a few minutes before the top of the hour, so let's give... I would like to just end this. For me, I would like to say that... Oh, dear, I can't even say it.
All right, well, thanks.
All right,
Brad, nice
but except
you.
That I love you, Brian. I love you too, Brad.
Yeah,
and we can wish everybody a happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. Yes. Thank you, both of you, so much. Aloha.